Signs of Divinity, Commentary for the October 12, 2024 Sabbath School Lesson by Stephen Terry, Director, Stillwaters Ministry, www.visitstillwaters.com. The man answered, "Now that is remarkable. You don't know where he comes from, yet he opened my eyes. We know that God does not listen to sinners. He listens to the godly person who does his will. Nobody has ever heard of opening the eyes of a man born blind. If this man were not from God, he could do nothing." John chapter 9, verses 30 through 33. We like to think we live in a more enlightened time than when Jesus walked the shores of Galilee 2,000 years ago. Like the Pharisee looking down on the publican, we look at those ignorant ancients and pat ourselves on the back, for we know we would never betray Jesus or deny his being the Messiah. We can trace every step of our growing spiritual maturity through centuries of reformers and the denominations founded by them. We finally got it right in our day. We are the chosen citizens of the kingdom of God, destined to meet the time of the end with faith and patience as we await the arrival of Christ the Bridegroom to take us home where we belong. We are the remnant of Revelation chapter 12. We keep the commandments of God and have the testimony of Jesus. Revelation chapter 19 tells us that the testimony of Jesus is a spirit of prophecy. We keep the biblical Sabbath, evidence of our faithful commandment keeping. We claim Ellen White had the gift of prophecy. We even refer to her writings as the spirit of prophecy. So we tick all the boxes to be God's remnant chosen people. Who can doubt our movement or destiny? We have grown to over 23 million members worldwide. While this is barely even a drop in the bucket compared to over 8 billion souls walking the planet, surely 23 million in the space of less than two centuries is evidence of God's blessing. Besides, we have built many hospitals, schools, and universities, not to mention the thousands of churches. We are a people uniformly marching into destiny, waving the gospel banner, called out of the evil Babylonian denominations who worship on Sunday and are destined to perdition for creating and teaching a false Sabbath. We alone see the danger of this false Sabbath as being the mark of the beast and warn the world. While others see the mark of the beast as a microchip or a tattoo, they are deceived and will go into perdition, as all the Sunday worshipers will. We alone are right in all of this. Or are we? Will this separate the sheep from the goats on that coming day? Will it be what separates the five foolish virgins from the five who went in to rejoice with the bride and groom? Is the straight gate the Sabbath and the wide gate Sunday worship? Have we charged ahead furiously like a horse with blinders, unable to see what is around us for the narrowed vision we enforce on believers, sometimes mercilessly? When we compare what we are today with the religious environment of Jesus' day, it is astonishing how little has changed. Now as then, the wealthy control the church. They ruled the temple and the synagogues, as they now rule the conferences and the local churches. It is visible in every area of church praxis. The common people in the pews, who eke out their existence from week to week on fixed incomes, come on Sabbath, but they are not the ones calling the shots for worship, how the church budget is allocated and spent, who the religious leaders for the major offices locally and conference-wide will be. Should they nominate one of their own for a leading position, it would die in the nominating committee. As I have heard more than once in such meetings, those who are contributing the most financially to the church should decide how the funds are used. Granted, I have never heard this from the pulpit, but what happens at church is determined behind closed doors in various boards and committees, not in the weekly sermon. After enduring the sermon, which is usually a regurgitation of dogma and presents little that is innovative or challenging beyond general aphorisms parroted for generations as the foundations or pillars of Adventism, growling stomachs move the believers on to potluck. This is where church praxis reveals itself in full form. Seeing vegetarianism as a health message in its entirety, the Baptist favorite of fried chicken is frowned upon and will produce whispers among the saints asking, "Who brought that?" Salvation by diet, it turns out, is a tenet of Adventist dogma, as opposed to salvation by temperance and exercise. We love to teach cooking schools, but rarely evangelize with workout sessions. Even our efforts in teaching abstinence from substance abuse have become anemic over the last half century. Our 5-day stop smoking plans were innovative and helped smokers to leave that pernicious habit behind. But like other community outreaches, it has been placed on the shelf to gather dust. America and the rest of the world never needed ministry for substance abuse more than now. It has become a crisis of epidemic proportions. But if we have the Sabbath each week, we tell ourselves that we are good. Potluck also highlights another issue. When allowed to choose their own seating, the poor, disabled, or unknown visitors are often seated at their tables, and the wealthy leaders and power brokers of the church sit at their own. When one of them does choose to sit with the poorer members at potluck, the faces of those who do not choose to do so reveal their thoughts to be, "He knows not what manner of person this is, or he would not have sat there." The poorer members are well aware how the wealthier members view them. Although nothing was said outright to them, the whispers, eye rolls, and subtle gestures tell the story that they should stay in their place. Sadly, those subtle hints have become so natural to those displaying them, they do not even realize they are doing it. Laodicea does not realize the truth of their condition. Only Jesus can open their eyes to their need. We are as blind to the needs of others as we are to our own, as blind as a man Jesus gave sight to. Ironically, Jesus did not simply speak and cause his sight to return. He took clay and put it on the man's eyes. Genesis tells us God used the same substance to create humanity in the first place. It was as though he were returning the man to what humanity was meant to be from the beginning. We often speak of being like angels and flying about the sky with halos and harps, but what is wrong with simply being again what God intended from the beginning? Will heaven not be heaven without wings, halos, and harps? For the blind man, heaven may have seemed to have arrived when he could see the faces of those who had loved and cared for him his whole life. Will we be happy if heaven is all about caring for others more than ourselves? Would it be heaven if every time someone expressed an opinion, everyone else took it upon themselves to shoot it down, as so often happens with social media? If we enjoy trolling others, we are more like those religious leaders who trolled the blind man for his healing, refusing to acknowledge anything he or his parents said as truth. They even went as far as to ban him from synagogue when he would not admit they were right and he was wrong. They were like those who today say we must believe them despite the evidence of our eyes. Power always feels threatened by new perspectives gained from new vistas, and new vistas come from eyes being opened. How many of us are like that blind man, blind from birth? We go to church each week and listen to sermons and the continuous inculcation of dogma without introspection. Leaders take it upon themselves to guide those of us they consider blind on their same paths as others did to them. If questions arise to challenge blind belief, those raising them can be expelled as a blind man who encountered Jesus was. The blind man was no fool. He knew he had experienced love in his parents' care for him and in Jesus' healing of his sight. And he knew that what the religious leaders were giving him was not love. While they should have been rejoicing with him, they condemned him because their dogma, cast in stone, had no room for a miracle that had never happened before. As Seventh-day Adventists, we must seek healing for our own blindness. We get so caught up in dogmatic truth that we stumble to learn that love is truth. For if God is love, and Jesus is God, and he is the truth, mathematics tells us that love is truth. For if A equals B and B equals C, then it follows that A equals C. No matter how complex we make our belief system, it does not change that simple formula. Jesus said it succinctly. Love God and love others. Friendly others, enemy others, disabled others, poor others, even others who do not want or feel they need to be loved. Our lives are short, and the need in this world for love is immense. There is no time or space to clutter up what time we have with anything else. Love always. Thank you for listening to this commentary podcast. You can find the written version of this commentary at our website, along with hundreds of other commentaries and podcasts and articles and links to books by the author. That's www.visitstillwaters.com. Once again, that's www.visitstillwaters.com. May God richly bless you and your family.